They hoped it was a good sign for the future, that the acid rains were starting to fade away. But that didn't lull them into a false sense of security. In less than a minute, the deadly yellow rain could strip a shrieking man of flesh down to his raw bones, in spite of being weakened by the presence of the clean water shower. Of course, the strength of the acid rain depended on many factors, one of which was a person's location in the Deathlands. With all that useless water outside, the salty ocean and the acid rain, it had seemed amazing to the companions that the machinery of the redoubt had been still able to deliver all the crystal clear water the companions wanted the previous night. Everything Ryan was wearing, pre-dark combat boots, denim pants, and matching shirt, were in the unusual state of being thoroughly clean. Even his heavy fur-lined coat had gone through the wash, the accumulated blood, mud, and food stains purged by the gently chugging laundry machines down on the fifth level. The companions were showered and shaved, warm and clean, a rare treat for anybody these days, and everyone except Christy Roth had had his or her hair trimmed.
I've seen worse, but not by much.
I hear you. Dark night, remember that big wash in Tennessee? That was nothing compared to this mother of a storm.
Those ruins are damn close. Maybe if we had an APC, we could chance a run.
Maybe, but that sure ain't to be the first to try.
You think we're still in the Deathlands?
Standing in the access tunnel near the somber men was the beautiful Christy Roth. She leaned against the brick wall of the passageway, her left arm moving steadily as she brushed her teeth. The long red hair hanging to her shoulders flexed and stirred against the direction of the breeze coming from the redoubt, as if the crimson filaments were endowed with an independent life force of their own. Her cowboy boots shone with polish. She traded in her jumpsuit for denim pants and a crisp white shirt, bound sealed in a plastic box. Around her waist was a police gun belt supporting a .38 caliber revolver, a deadly compact blaster that had seen many battles. But very few of the ammunition loops of the gun belt held any live brass. Mostly, they were filled with spent cartridges, waiting to be reloaded.
Nuking hell, we could be any place. There's no way of telling through this shit. But it doesn't resemble any area I've seen before.
Well, without a clear view of the sun, there's no way for me to get a reading. We might be in Europe or Brazil, for all I know.
That memo we found in the trash bin mentioned the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean this is them. Maybe the guy was planning on going there when the world ended.
Oh, hell. It's still raining.
Mildred Wyeth was a short physician dressed in army fatigue pants, an officer's white shirt, and a loose denim jacket. Clipped to the front of her canvas web belt was a Czech ZKR target pistol, and draped over her shoulder was a canvas bag with the faded letters MASH on the side. The pre-dark field surgery kit had never left her possession since she'd recently found it. The medicine was long gone, but the few surgical instruments it contained were beyond price.
Sorry, Mildred. Nobody's going anywhere.
Who would have ever thought it possible that living green plants would be immune to acid rain?
Some new mutation, probably. Not every newbie wants to eat people.
Just most of them.
Maybe these plants feed off the rain. You know those pre-dark whitecoats were working on making things that could survive Skydark.
They had encountered the experiments of the crazy whitecoats before. The bioweps, genetically altered creatures that could withstand certain hostile conditions. Some even surviving the deadly rads in the blast craters.
If only I could get a sample.
They're as unreachable as the stars, madam.
Upon hearing the voice of Doc Tanner, the four companions turned to see their other friends amble through the open doorway of the redoubt. With nobody standing in the way anymore, the multi-ton door slid closed. Tall and lean, Doc Tanner was dressed as if from another century, with a swallowtail jacket and frilly shirt. But the impression of gentility was belied by the strictly utilitarian Lamar hand cannon on his gun belt, the grip of the massive black powder weapon worn from constant use. Doc carried an ebony walking stick with a silver lion's head for a handle. Hidden inside was a rapier of the finest Toledo steel.
NASA has sent probes to the stars, you old coot.
Indeed, madam, so you say. But they brought back nothing useful that we know about. And so it shall be again this time, I'm afraid. We can look, but don't touch.
Just like in that vid.
Jack Lauren brushed back his snowy white hair. The albino teenager was wearing camo-color clothing. His jacket was a deadly weapon, as bits of razor-sharp metal had been sewn into the fabric here and there. If anyone grabbed him by the collar, the person would lose fingers. A number of leaf-bladed throwing knives were hidden about his person, and a massive .357 Magnum Colt Python was holstered at his side.
What vid was that, Jack?
Dean and I saw it, in another redoubt. Victory or Victoria, maybe. Skinny man standing in the snow, looked through window at fat Baron in the gaudy house stuffing himself with food. And I followed his story after that. Boring, but only vid is still played on the comp.
It's Victor Victoria.
Ryan, we simply must reach those trees. Surely something could be done. That city cannot be more than a league away, perhaps less.
A league? We wouldn't last 10 feet in that storm. Come on, we wasted enough time here. Let's go.
Going to the entrance of the redoubt, Ryan tapped a code into the armored keypad set into the door jamb. There was a brief pause, and then the huge black portal ponderously slid closed. Ryan gave one last look toward the nameless city and its surrounding forest, with trees that could withstand the acid rains. With a grimace, the one-eyed man turned and entered the redoubt. The rest of the companion stayed close behind. As the group walked along the entranceway of the redoubt, they heard the massive nuke-proof door slide shut. Running stiff fingers through his black hair, Ryan tried not to let his anger show. This base had been a triple zero. No food, no ammo, no exit. All of the basic stuff in the base worked. Everybody had washed their clothing and soaked in hot baths until they felt clean again. JB had even found a pair of decent socks, and Doc had located a tiny plastic vial of silicon lube. The stuff was made for comp printers, but worked just fine on the sword hidden inside his walking stick. But that had been the lot. The rest of the redoubt had been stripped clean, bare to the walls. And worse, their food supplies were getting dangerously low again. The companions had 6 days' worth of MRE packs left. After that, they'd be eating stewed boot if they couldn't find anything in this redoubt. There really was no other choice. The companions would have to jump again, whether they wanted to or not. Exiting the passageway, the somber group crossed the vast parking garage and retrieved their backpacks. All around them, the painted lines on the concrete floor of the garage were empty and waiting. This was where the staff of the redoubt would have parked over 100 wags, civvy cars, motorcycles, Hummers, APCs, trucks, and even the occasional tank. But the garage looked brand new, as if it had been built and then abandoned. There wasn't a single tool on the pegboard racks behind the workbenches, only the tape outlines of where each tool should be placed after it had been used. The drawers were empty, the supply closet vacant, and there wasn't a single stain in the grease pit. Even the fuel storage tanks were bone dry, the seals on the nuked redoubt they had found in this condition, but it seemed to be happening more and more often. Was somebody looting the underground forts besides themselves? It was a sobering thought, and one that left the companions apprehensive and uneasy. The redoubts had been their lifeline more times than could be counted. Reaching the door for the control room, Ryan pushed it aside and strode past the banks of humming comps. This was the heart of the redoubt, or more correctly, the brain. These were the machines that controlled the mighty fission reactors deep down in the sub-basement for the life support systems, air recycling, water sanitation, the freezers, the front door, and the all-important Mattrans units. Without the comps, the base instantly became an airless tomb.
All clear.
The others filed into the chamber past Ryan. As he closed the door behind them, something rolled out of the shadows at the far end of the control room. With its two metallic antennas quivering, the boxy device rushed to the main computer and urgently extended a probe to quickly connect with the master control panel. Halfway across the world, Delphi suddenly felt a vibration inside his left wrist and flipped his hand over to see a message scrolling along the palm monitor.
Excellent! The prey has been found at last!
Quickly typing instructions on his bare wrist, Delphi waited impatiently as the droid accessed circuits undisturbed for a century.
Come on, come on!
Soon, a roster of available redoubts was displayed. Frowning at the list, Delphi chose one at random. It was a base he had never been to before because it was on the forbidden list. But this was a day for breaking the rules, and once the process had started, he saw little reason to be cautious now.
Get ready, traitor. Here I come.
Everyone ready?
Ryan checked to make sure that everybody was safely inside the unit and seated on the floor.
Ready as we'll ever be.
Once more into the breach, dear friends.
The jumps always hit the companions hard, often sending them to the floor, puking at their guts from the shock and pain of the instantaneous transference. As Ryan slammed the door shut and hurried to sit next to Christy, a fine mist swirled upward from the discs on the floor to engulf the companions. Mists from the ceiling descended upon them. They braced themselves for the expected snap of tiny sparks to crackle over their exposed skin. But instead, there was only soothing warmth that spread through their bodies as the thickening mist began to swirl faster with every heartbeat.
What the hell? Something doesn't feel right.
After so many jumps, there was a certain sameness that the companions had come to expect, so anything out of the norm was suspicious.
Is the Mantrance broken? Maybe the computer's having a malfunk. Hell, I have to stop the jump. Who knows where we're being sent? We might be going...
Ryan frantically tried to stand to reach the door, but he felt the floor drop away, and he knew that he'd been just a split second too slow. The jump had begun.
We might be going nowhere.
As gently as falling through a cloud, the terrified companions descended into the artificial forever of the matter transfer and vanished from sight. But even as it started, their fall came to a relaxing halt, and the companions were able to watch as the electronic mists faded away to leave them unharmed and unruffled in a new matter transport unit.
Son of a bitch.
We're not dead.
No, we're not.
Doc cringed against the wall, braced as if for a blow. His hands twisted the silver lion's head on the walking stick, exposing a few inches of the stainless steel sword hidden inside the hollow sheath. Simultaneously, Ryan drew his blaster, and Jack allowed a throwing knife to slip out of his sleeve and into his hand.
You okay, Doc?
Not again. No hardship means a controlled jump. That means they have found me. Operation Kronos has found me again.
Are you sure?
Doc sheathed his sword.
No, by the three Kennedys, they haven't found me. The bastards have found us. But they can't have you. I won't let them get their hands on you, too.
Whipping out his ebony stick, Doc lunged toward Christy. Even though the sword stick was sheathed, the redhead twisted aside. But it hadn't been necessary. The bottom of the stick missed her by inches, as intended, and stabbed the last destination button on the control panel. Recoiling at the sight, everybody braced for the torture of the instantaneous travel, but nothing happened. The Matrans unit didn't respond to the signal from the emergency LD button.
Nuke me. We should have gone right back to the last redoubt. That button's never failed to work before.
I don't think it did fail. I think we're not being allowed to leave.
You mean the Doc's right, and that this might have been a controlled jump?
Possibly.
Mute as shit. Shoo. Just a malfunk.
Ryan slid the Steyr SSG-70 long blaster off his shoulder and worked the bolt. There were only 4 5-round clips remaining for the Steyr, but they were much more powerful than the 9mm para. Once, very long ago, Ryan had killed a cougar with his bare hands, and the Deathlands warrior would rather do that again than face a Sec Hunter droid, even if he was armed with a bazooka. The damn machines were almost impossible to stop once they started coming after a target. Ryan listened hard to the redoubt, getting the feel of the place, the gentle hum of the air vents, the muffled noises of the water pipes, and high-pitched whine of the fluorescent lights overhead. Everything seemed normal. Not a thing was different or strange. And that was what scared him.
Hit the button again, Jack.
Keeping his weapon level, Jack reached for the keypad and tapped the LD button. But again, to no result.
Okay. We trapped.
No! Please! We must jump again! We cannot let them find you. You have no idea what they can do, will do to you. We have to leave right now.
Doc pushed Jack aside.
Hey!
And began hitting the controls in a fast sequence. Mildred reached out a hand, but Doc dodged out of the way and started pounding on the keypad.
Work, damn you! Why will you not work?
Doc slipped to the floor and buried his face in his hands as the startled companions exchanged worried expressions. The sight of such weakness shocked Ryan for a moment, but then he suddenly understood and felt like a fool. It had to have been all of those jumps that had scrambled Doc's brain and made him so forgetful. Pieced together from various conversations, Ryan knew that the agents of Operation Kronos had trawled dozens of people from the past and brought them into the 20th century. But Doc was the only person to ever survive the process sane. The pre-dark whitecoats had nearly turned the poor Vermont scholar inside and out, trying to solve that vital mystery.